If you have your Bibles, let's turn to the book of 2 Samuel. We began it just a few weeks ago, starting back into the Old Testament here and kind of picking up where we left off quite some time ago in 2 Samuel and the life and ministry of King David, and we are chapter 9. And David said, "Is there still anyone left in the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake?" Now there was a servant in the house of Saul whose name was Ziba. And they called him to David, and the king said to him, "Are you Ziba?" And he said, "I am your servant." And the king said, "Is there not someone in the house of Saul that I may show the kindness of God to him?" And Ziba said to the king, "There is still the son of Jonathan. He is crippled in his feet." And the king said to him, "Where is he?" And Ziba said to the king, "He is in the house of Machir, the son of Amiel of Lodabar." Then King David sent and brought him from the house of Machir, the son of Amiel of Lodabar. And Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, son of Saul, came to David, fell on his face, and paid homage. And David said, "Mephibosheth." And he answered, "Behold, I am your servant." And David said to him, "Do not fear, for I show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan. And I will restore to you all the land of Saul your father, and you shall eat at my table always." And he paid homage and said, "What is your servant that you should show regard for a dead dog such as I?" And the king said to Ziba, Saul's servant, said to him, "All that belonged to Saul and to his house I've given to your master's grandson. And you and your sons and your servants shall till the land for him, shall bring in the produce that your master's grandson may have bread to eat. But Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, will always eat at my table." Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. And then Ziba said to the king, "According to all that my lord the king commands his servants, so will your servant do." So Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. And Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Micah, and all who lived in Ziba's house became Mephibosheth's servants. So Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem, for he ate always at the king's table. Now he was lame in both his feet. After this, the king of the Ammonites died, and Hanun, his son, reigned in the place. And David said, "I will deal loyally with Hanun, the son of Nahash, as his father dealt loyally with me." So David sent by his servants to console him concerning his father. And David's servants came into the land of the Ammonites, but the princes of the Ammonites said to Hanun their lord, "Do you think because David sent his comforters to you that he is honoring your father? Has not David sent his servants to teach to you to search the city and to spy it out and to overthrow it?" So Hanun took David's servants, shaved off half the beard of each, cut off their garments in the middle at their hips, and sent them away. When it was told David, he sent to meet them, for the men were greatly ashamed. And the king said, "Remain at Jericho until your beards have grown, and then return." When the Ammonites saw that they had become a stench to David, the Ammonites sent and hired the Syrians of Beth-Rahab on the Syrians of Zobah, 20,000 foot soldiers, and the king of Maacah with 1,000 men, and the men of Tob, 12,000 men. And then David heard of it. He sent Joab and all the host of the mighty men. The Ammonites came out and drew up the battle array in the entrance of the gate, and the Syrians of Zobah and of Rehob and the men of Tob and Maacah were by themselves in the open country. When Joab saw that the battle was set against him, both in front and in the rear, he chose some of the best men of Israel and arrayed them against the Syrians. The rest of his men he put in charge of Abishai, his brother, and arrayed them against the Ammonites. And he said, "If the Syrians are too strong for me, then you shall help me. But if the Ammonites are too strong for you, then I'll come and help you. Be of good courage and let us be courageous for our people and for the cities of our God, and may the Lord do what seems good to him." So Joab and the people who were with him drew near to the battle against the Syrians, and they fled before him. And when the Ammonites saw the Syrians fled, then they likewise fled before Abishai and entered the city. And then Joab returned from fighting against the Ammonites and came to Jerusalem. But when the Syrians saw that they had been defeated by Israel, they gathered themselves together, and Hadadezer sent and brought out the Syrians who were beyond the Euphrates, and they came to Helam with Shobach, the commander of the army of Hadadezer, at their head. And when it was told David, he gathered all Israel together, crossed the Jordan, came to Helam. And the Syrians arrayed themselves against David and fought with him. And the Syrians fled before Israel, and David killed of the Syrians the men of 700 chariots and 40,000 horsemen, and wounded Shobach, the commander of the army, so that he died there. And when all the kings who were servants of Hadadezer saw that they had been defeated by Israel, they made peace with Israel and became subject to them. So the Syrians were afraid to save the Ammonites anymore. Now, as we cover these two chapters, I hope you can see the connection right away, as I did, and that was that it's not a hard thing at all to see the connection in these two chapters. To his credit, as we began that first chapter, we see that David, at this point, King David, he seemed to have a gentle spirit. Now, we don't know a lot about the guy's personality other than what we read, but we can gather from his actions here that he did indeed have a gentle spirit. He had a soft heart, despite being very good at the brutal things like warfare. I mean, this guy was good in battle. So despite being quite the warrior, he still had a gentle side of him. And I think that reflects a heart that is powerfully present by the kindness of God. I mean, I think you see God present in that kind of a life, and very gentle. And I think that this heart that you're seeing in David, I think it is many times absent in the much larger Christian world today. This heart of gentle grace. David certainly had every reason on earth to erase every trace of Saul off the face of this planet. If you know the story and you were here when we were going through it, you know that Saul was pretty relentless, despite David's continuing grace that he showed. And he had several times he could have killed Saul, and he didn't. So if David at this point in the storyline were to move to, you know, absolutely erase the family line of Saul off the face of the earth, I think very few people would have blamed him. But he did more than let this young man, Mephibosheth, live. He actually moved to bless him in the greatest way that David possibly knew how to do. Now, again, if you were with us when we were going through it, and if you know, it's been a long while, so I just remind you that David had promised both Saul and Jonathan, his son, that he would not erase their family name, their family line, if you will, once he became king, that he would not go out and kill all of their descendants. So he made a promise. So, wow, apparently David was a man of his word. And how strange that is in our generation. We can hardly even imagine somebody actually being a man or woman of their word. It's rare. So rare that no one expects it. I mean, I think that to be a man, or to even know a man that does what he says he's going to do, extremely rare. Now, our generation, we live in an age that embraces this ideal of random acts of kindness. You know, that was for a while, that was the thing. Now it's the Me Too movement. Ladies, it'll pass. So, you know, I wish it wouldn't. I mean, I understand there's a reason for it. But if you think it's anything other than a bunch of hoopla and politics, then you're kidding yourself. It's just all gonna go away when the next fad rolls into town. But there was a fad, random acts of kindness. Remember that? And I think it's a nice idea, and I don't have anything wrong with it at all. I think we all would benefit from being open to such a practice as random acts of kindness. But I think there's also a very real place in a Christian's life for intentionally planned kindness. In other words, one that carefully considers who might be a proper and righteous recipient of our kindness. Not willy-nilly, but actually planned. Scripture records back for Samuel, for the most part, records that at least three times David and Jonathan made covenants with one another. The biggest discussion was for Samuel 20, if you weren't around and you want to catch some context. But what they were doing is they were making very solemn promises to each other. And I want you to note that they made those promises to each other even before God warranted that confidence and faith in each other. Now, in the end, David and Jonathan ended up being pretty tight. They were good, you know, good friends, tight buddies. But they made these promises even before that was proven. See, it's one thing to, you know, have a history with somebody. It's something else to go, I am choosing to trust you. And I'm telling you, you can trust me. So they made solemn promises to each other. You see, guys, the follow through of a man or a woman, their word, I guess, that's the measure of an individual, really. I think we oftentimes say we're going to do something or say that we are something, but whether we follow through with that says who we are. The word seldom used today, but the word is integrity. This is why, by the way, we have covenant relationships provided in this church. And that's not a comment to pick on anybody if you're not part of that. But for those of you that are, I'm speaking to you. That's why we have that. I mean, this means something to us to make those promises. This isn't just church membership. It's a covenantal promise to each other. I'm making a promise to you. I got your back. And you're making a promise and saying, yes, and Tim, I got yours. And it's rare. And that's why it's held so highly to some of us. I realize some, again, it's not an issue. But to those of us that have made that promise, for many of us at least anyway, it means something. It means a lot. I know, and I'm one of them for sure. Now, I want you to imagine for a moment here what it was like to be in Mephibosheth's shoes at this point. Now, you got to understand the magnitude of what this guy was facing. I mean, he is one of the few remaining, if not the last, members of the house of Saul. So he was probably living each and every day in fear of his life. Afraid that King David was going to come track him down and kill him in order to, you know, solidify his hold over the country. And listen, this Mephibosheth really had very little going for him. I mean, he was poor. He was a crippled man. His family, extended family, was gone at this point. Most of them had been killed in battle. All the way back to when he was 5 years old, his nurse, she was trying to run in the wake of the fall of his family. I mean, get out of town and get out of town quick. And in doing so, in that process, Mephibosheth was dropped accidentally and his legs were permanently damaged. So he was crippled. And then all of his life now, he's no doubt been warned that David's going to come and find him and kill him. And so no doubt he lived in fear and he lived in that misery every day. So this is a guy who really didn't have much going for him at all. And I can't help but feel when I look at that picture and I look at Mephibosheth and I see what he was facing, I see in this an application for us and a beautiful picture of divine grace. I mean, especially when you remember the very unkind and unjust treatment that David had suffered at the hand of Saul. It's not like that Saul's family didn't deserve it. They absolutely deserve it. Yet there was a faithful promise that was made and it was followed through on. That's grace. That's a covenantal promise that was made 2,000 years ago, if not even all the way back in the garden, on our behalf sitting here today. It's funny how lightly we take that. I mean, we just kind of, oh, thank you very much. And just kind of go on. It's a very small thing for some of us because we don't fully take a step back and grasp the magnitude of what we've been given and that we don't deserve any of it. In fact, we deserve death. That's what we've done. That's what our family has done. That's what our lineage of humanity has done. And it's a picture we see all the aspects of grace in this. Mephibosheth, as we said, he was disabled. He was crippled in both of his feet. And David now, he goes out and finds this guy. Brings him out of isolation, out of hiding, out of desolation, out of this place he was in, and brings him, what? To a palace in Jerusalem. A palace. And he gives him all the lands that belonged to his grandfather, gives it all back to him, the stuff that belonged to King. And even more than that, David brings him into his family and treats him as his own son with all the privileges that that position takes on. Does this sound unfamiliar to you? In response, Mephibosheth very much approached the king with great humility. He bowed before him. Now, mind you, he could have took, not that he was a tough guy, because he wasn't. He couldn't have done anything more to David than we could do to our father, okay? But I mean, he could have had an attitude. He could have been pulling an attitude here. Because in reality, I mean, he could have been very vengeful. You killed my granddad, you know, that all that stuff that went on. If it wasn't for you, I'd still have a family. And by rights, according to the position, according to bloodline anyway, Mephibosheth should be king. And maybe he had that attitude. Maybe he could have came and said, you know, no, I don't want you to be king. I want to be king. Does that also sound familiar to you? Sure. We all want to be God, don't we? That's the battle. Now, I also want you to note that David's actions towards Mephibosheth was not contingent upon him at all. He just said, hey, you know, if you chill out and you're a good guy, then you can do this. No, he said, this is going to happen, Mephibosheth. This is going to happen. And so it wasn't a contingent upon Mephibosheth agreeing or liking him or anything. Again, grace and a picture of our relationship with our king. But actually, it was just an action put out there as a matter of honor and integrity on the part of David. In other words, David said, I am going to do this. And once again, that kind of commitment, that kind of one-sided thing, that's very rare, even today in the greater church. We often are lean on the grace, aren't we? That doesn't mean that we have to agree. That doesn't mean that I have to go along with what you think or what you are doing. But allowing, sure. Yeah. We say again so oftentimes that we're going to do something. Maybe we even make public promises, but we fail to follow through with that action. And in doing so, we become liars and we break promises and we do not live up to the integrity that is presented here. I think today we live in a very different world, one that hardly even can imagine such level of character and integrity. A world that, I guess, and maybe it's just my viewpoint, but it seems to me that we all need someone to blame for everything that goes wrong in our lives. I mean, it's never anybody's fault anymore. You ever notice that? You know, Bobby gets shot by the cops because he was involved in a drive-by and he, you know, shot into a house and they chased him down and they shot Bobby because he wouldn't drop the gun. But, you know, I don't understand because Bobby, he was such a good boy. You know, they always say that. Bobby was a good boy. No. Bobby was not a good boy. He's a bad boy. He was drive-by shooting. I mean, Bobby was not a good boy. But we can never just say that. We can never just take responsibility. I mean, we need a scapegoat for every accident, and now we have a lawsuit for every splinter. Now, please don't read me wrong. I'm not saying that there isn't times legitimate issues that would require a lawyer or would require a police officer, but I think we're way beyond that today, aren't we? I mean, it's a time, we live in a time where in every case someone's to blame. And someone's going to pay. So we sue one guy and we shoot the other one. We get mad, we lost a job, so let's go into work and let's shoot a bunch of employees. Why? What did they have to do with you losing your job? But that's the mentality. And again, we think it's guns. And maybe I'm getting political. I don't think it's guns. I think it's right up here. We're not healthy mentally, spiritually, emotionally. We're angry. Very, very angry. But you know, after all, we've been wronged, right? And so we live in a pride-filled entitlement age, and we are going to have our satisfaction. I'm either going to sue you, or I'm going to kill you. Not what David did. Keep your finger here in Samuel and turn all the way to the New Testament. Turn to 1 Corinthians. Let's take a look at the way the world is supposed to be, shall we? Chapter 6, 1 Corinthians. When one of you has a grievance against another, does he dare go to law before the unrighteous instead of the saints? Or do you not know that the saints will judge the world? And if the world is to be judged by you, are you incompetent to try trivial cases? Do you not know that we are to judge angels? How much more than matters pertaining to this life? So if you have such cases, why do you lay them before those who have no standing in the church? I say this to your shame. Can it be that there is no one among you wise enough to settle a dispute between the brothers, but brother goes to law against brother, and that before unbelievers? To have lawsuits at all with one another is already a defeat for you. Why not rather suffer wrong? Why not rather be defrauded? But you yourselves wrong and defraud even your own brothers. That's what the Lord wants from us, but I think we look at that and think that's rather idyllic, isn't it? You know, well, that's a nice goal, but that's not a reality. Okay? Especially when we're dealing brother to brother, sister to sister. But usually we need to get Google involved. See, David not only did what he promised to do, he went above and beyond the call of duty. He loved even with no guarantee or proof of reciprocation of that love. Again, that sound like anybody, you know? Because it sounds like my Jesus. While we were yet sinners, Christ died. Not after you became a Christian, he died for you. Matthew 5:41 calls us out in this. It says, if a soldier demands that you carry his gear for a mile, carry it 2 miles. Now, David was on a roll with chapter 9, and I think he must have been feeling pretty good about it. So in chapter 10, he tries again to show kindness in a situation, and one where there's no overt act of kindness. It was not mandated, and it was certainly not even expected what David did. And yet David went out of his way to bless somebody who he perceived was hurting and that was in a bad situation. However, things didn't go so well this time, did they? You talk about unraveling quickly. This time the people, apparently paranoid, you know, conspiracy theory for sure, all right? They got this idea that something's going down here and they're not to be trusted, so they turned on their benefactors and shamed and mistreated them. And ESV doesn't really do it. I mean, do you understand what they did to him? I mean, they cut the robes off and exposed their behinds. That's what they did. King James will clear it up for you. Just cut one half the beard off. You know, everything they did was to embarrass and shame them and then send them home that way. Now, that's humanity. It wasn't enough to say, no, thank you. We need to embarrass you and shame you and humiliate you. We're good at that because we have the weapons of social media. Now, it's not my night to pick on social media. Most of you who are my friends, you know how I feel about this. Far too utilized by Christians, as far as I'm concerned. But Christian, you ever do that? You need to understand the Bible has words for you about doing that. So be very, very careful what you're saying out there. So they send these people, they shame them, send them off. And of course, that didn't go over well with David. And he essentially called out the Marines. It's like, is that what you guys want? All right. What about us when we have to deal with such situations? What do we do? How do we answer back to that? Will we fail to show grace and love because we didn't get any in return, or we may not get any in return? Or are you willing to do so because of the love already poured upon you by Jesus Christ? Ecclesiastes 5:8 says, there's a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. And there needs to be some consideration of what those times are. Romans 12:18 says, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Paul, I mean, that's awesome. I mean, if it is possible. And Paul and his writings here, very practical. Again, as much as it depends on you, or as far as it's possible on your behalf, live with peace with everyone. So certainly I think that this is implying that we need to be not only making that effort, but I am willing to acknowledge here this is saying that it is impossible to live at peace with some people. Ephesians 6:12 says, for we do not wrestle against flesh and blood,
but against the rulers, against authorities, against cosmic powers over the present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. So what does that mean? It means the battle is not with people. It's with the dark side, with the satanic presence. That's your battle. But it's like a greased pig. You can't get your hands on it, right? I'm reminded how Scripture refers to the Lord as our attorney. You know, when you got a good attorney, the best thing for you to do is not say nothing. Shut up and let your attorney do the talking. And we need to do that. Psalms 103 verse 8 says, "The Lord is merciful and gracious, slow to anger, abounding in mercy." That's the mark for us Christians.